you can construct a renormalized theory for the phi 4 massless theory. Massless meaning that the physical mass is equal to zero. So the particle contains massless particles. And we saw that we can construct at least at one loop in perturbation theory. So just keeping the leading quantum effects associated to one loop diagrams, we can construct a renormalized theory, quantum theory. Renormalized means that it is ultraviolet finite. So you have no problem at one loop with the high energy behavior of the theory. You can introduce a high energy cutoff, but you can take the limit when the high energy cutoff is goes to infinity, and the theory still makes sense. Okay? And we have seen that in order to do that, first, you have to control the behavior of the two-point function so that it is finite. And we have to control the behavior of the four-point function so that it is finite. And in fact, we have seen that it is finite. It's sufficient in order to get a renormalized theory to consider the four-point function, to consider the irreducible part, if you want, because that's the important part which contains the information about the strength of the interaction. And you just have to consider that for a fixed reference, a choice of the momenta, that we choose for convenience to be what's happening when P1 plus P2 squared equal, so the three possible choice equals some reference energy scale. And this defines, this is enough to define the theory. So if I consider the four-point function is finite at some reference energy scale that I call mu, which is the renormalization scale. So this defines a renormalized coupling constant. That's called GR. And that's enough. That's enough to get a finite quantum field theory, namely all the correlation function, so all the vacuum expectation value of fields operator are finite. So all the matrix elements of the operator in this theory are expected to be finite at one loop, of course. And then I gave argument why this should be true at any order, but I just stated that, in fact, this is a more generalized. Okay. So remember, for that, for this theory, which was just a massless theory, the two-point function, which is a function of the momentum, is still p squared because there is no mass. And in fact, it turns out that the one-loop results, which is given by this, that's the three-level result, which is given by the propagator, the inverse of the propagator, it remains true up to two loops. So we don't know what are the two-loop contribution, because this would require to study the renormalization of the theory at two loop. But we know that at one loop, it is finite, and not only it is finite, but it is zero. So you can forget about that. This is just this plus all of g squared, but that's a peculiarity of the phi 4 theory, and that's because the physical mass is zero. Yes?
But the order of expansion in G is not the same as the number of loops, right?
No, but we have seen that there is a direct relation between them, because each time that you had a vertex, you had a h-bar because you had a loop.
I thought h-bar was related to the number of loops and the number of loops and the number of g's are not necessarily the same. I mean,
no, but they are up to a constant the same. No, I'm sorry. They are up to a starting point the same. So if you consider, for instance, the two-point function, this is a two-point function at tree level. This is the two-point function at first order. And so you see that here there is a G because there is a vertex, and there is a H-bar because you have a loop. Now consider a diagram at two second order. You have a G squared because there are two G, and you have an H-bar squared, etc. You see? Now consider a four-point function. Here there is a G. Now consider a diagram at one loop of the four-point function. You have two G's, and you have an H-bar. Okay, and consider now a diagram which is less non-trivial, something like that, at two loop. You have one, two, three vertices, and you have two loop. So you see, each time you had a G, you had a H-bar.
Okay, so
is it clear?
That, even though you could have one loop and it could be G or G squared, but then once you look at
If
you look at only the two-point function or only the four-point function, then
it goes on. If you consider the six-point function, consider the six-point function, there is nothing at tree level because we have an interaction. A theory is just a 5-4 interaction. There is no 5-6, but still you have a diagram like that at one loop, which is a six point function. And you have here, you have here, yes, I'm sorry. Here you have a diagram with a G squared and no loop. So it's a tree diagram. Now you may have something more complicated. I think I draw it here. You have something like that, for instance. So this is a diagram with a G cube because you have three vertices and one loop. And this go on. You see?
Okay, so just to clarify,
yes?
To summarize, in general, the number of G's and the number of loops is not the same. But if we are only looking at a particular function, then
it Yes. Okay, but we'll see. Just the purpose of this course is to explain that the concept of coupling constant is something a bit more subtle, while the concept of loop expansion is something which is topologically well defined. Okay, so let me come back. In this renormalized massless 5-4 theory, the two-point function is something very simple, but the four-point function is something less subtle because it depends on four momenta. Well, there is this momentum conservation. So I'm considering the that I have the constraint that this is zero, but I removed the delta function. And we have seen that this is at tree level just G because it's given by this diagram. And at first order in perturbation theory, this is given by, and this is now in my renormalized theory, this is GR. And then I have a GR squared. I have a 1/2. I have a factor 1/4 pi squared. And then I have the sum of the whole three diagrams. And once I have renormalized, the contribution of each diagram is a log of mu squared divided by P1 plus P2 squared. Plus log of mu squared over P1 plus P3 squared plus logarithm of mu squared over P1 plus P4 squared. Okay, so it's particularly simple. So it has this simple form because we are dealing with a massless theory. Yes?
If we define mu squared as P1 plus P2 quantity squared, how come each of those arguments in the log does not equal
If we define what? Mu?
So we defined mu squared as p1 plus p2.
No, no. I think you are confused. Mu squared is not defined. It's G renormalized equal this value when p squared equal mu squared. So and you check that if p1 plus p2 squared equal mu squared and p1 plus p3 squared equal mu squared and p1 plus p4 squared equal mu squared, then you get logs of 1, so you get 0, and you get then that the four-point function is equal to gr. But for other choice of momenta, it is not equal to gr, of course. Is it clear? Okay. So I was perhaps a bit short explaining. This is that gr is defined as a value of the irreducible four-point function for a given choice of external momenta, but a very specific one. And this choice depends on the choice of energy scale mu, which is called the renormalization scale. Okay, and so this is true only for the massless theory, only for the massless theory. Otherwise, it's more complicated. And of course, this is a result which is valid only at one loop. So you have corrections at order gr squared that we have not calculated out yet. And again, here, of course, this is gr squared. Okay. And if you look at this expression, and the same for, the same for other quantity, except that here you have gr. So if you look at those quantities, you said, OK, but my theory depends on, in fact, it doesn't depend only on gr. It depends, we have two parameters, apparently. You see? We have the renormalized Kuplik constant, because the theory depends on the Kuplik constant of the strength of the interaction. But we have also mu. Because the formula for the four-point function depends both on gr and of mu. You see? So it seems that renormalization seems to have introduced another parameter in my theory, which was not there in the classical theory. The classical theory depended only on the Kuplik constant, because I'm considering a massless theory. And when I quantize it, I need to introduce a second parameter, which is a renormalization scale, two parameters. So what does it mean? The point, if you think a little bit about it, is that in fact, you don't have two parameters. The theory depends always only on one parameter, which is the strength of the interaction. But this parameter that I call the renormalized Kuplik constant, its value depends on where it is measured. And you can check very easily that, in fact, up to order gr squared, if you choose a gr, a couple, make a drawing because things will be clearer in that way. Let me, let me draw, it's an important picture, so let me draw it here. Okay. So I got the impression that I have two parameters. I have a parameter which is mu, and I have a parameter which is the renormalized Kuplik constant. So these are the two parameters that I have in defining my theory, okay? And so apparently I say the theory is defined by a choice of gr and a choice of mu. And I choose a mu, so I choose a renormalization scale. I choose a value of the Kuplik constant, gr. And this defines all the correlation function of my quantum theory. And I, for instance, I can compare that to the results of an experiment of the collision between particles in a collider, for instance, and to fit to see what is the value of GR. See whether the theory is strongly interacting or weakly interacting. Okay? But in fact, you realize that in order to find what is the value of the coupling constant, you had to choose a mass scale, renormalization mass scales. And this means simply that if I make an experiment at energy mu 1, I will find a value G1 for the coupling constant. But for the same theory, for the same physical system, if I make an experiment at a different energy mu2, you might very well found another result for the coupling constant. You see? So you make experiment at energy E equal mu 1 gets G 1. And if you perform the same experiment at another energy mu 2, you get a result. And if you apply your formula, you get another coupling constant G 2. You see, but from this formula. Okay? But in fact, those two measurements of what is a coupling constant at different energy defines, in fact, two different measurements performed on the same theory. So in fact, this point in this parameter space and this point in this parameter space, in fact, describes exactly the same theory. There. Okay? So the same physical system or theory. See? And this is easy to see because, for instance, look at this expression. You realize that if you choose GR equal G1 and mu equal mu1 or GR equal G2 and mu equal mu2 so that if I write this expression, G1 minus G1 squared, 1 over 2, 1 over 4 pi squared, log of mu1 squared equal G2 minus G2 squared, 1 half, 1 over 4 pi squared, log of mu2 squared. You may object that here I have a log of an energy and the log of the energy, but if you bring the log of this energy here, you have a log of the ratio between two energies, so you don't, it's not a problem. Okay? So if you add, if G1, mu1, and G2, mu2 are such that this identity is satisfied, the gamma tilde 4 functions are the same. Just check. Of course, at order of one loop. Simply because if you are G1 minus G1 squared with a log, here you have a G2 minus G2 squared with a log, which gives the same results, and you are what remains is a G1 squared with the log of the p's and the G2 squared with the log of the p's. But since the difference between G1 and G2 is of order G squared, this is a difference at order G2. So in other words, what I can say that is that if I measure, so my 4 point, so my correlation function of the theory depends on the momenta. That depends on the coupling constant and then depends on my choice of coupling constant. But more generally, those shows give me all the same correlation function. So they describe the same physical theory. Okay? So this is equal to this plus term of order, let us say, h bar squared, if you prefer. So up to two loop corrections that I'm not taking into account. You see? So in fact, all choices of pair of g and mu which satisfies this relation, and you have an infinite number of them. And let me find a color chalk to use it. So you have a curve, a line, in this two-dimensional space of parameter, which in fact correspond to the same physical theory. So in fact, the parametrizing the theory by coupling constant and renormalization scale is a redundant parametrization. If you choose a renormalization scale, then the theory is defined, so the model, the physical model, is characterized by a single value of the coupling constant. And the physical interpretation is clear. This value of the coupling constant corresponds to the results of some physical experiment performed at an energy mu. Okay? But of course, then you may, I think there is some other chalks here. Of course, you may choose different choice. If at mu 1 you take another point, let us put it here. You see, you have the same thing here. So if at mu 1 you choose g prime 1, or if at mu 2 you choose g prime 2, which doesn't satisfy this relation, this is a different physical theory or model than this one, given by this point. See? So you still have, of course, an ensemble of theories which are characterized by different values of the coupling constant. If G is small, it's a weakly coupled theory. If G is large, this is a strongly coupled theory. But they correspond to points on those different lines. Yes?
So is this predictive? Like in our universe, do we find that we sit on one line, and so given a particular energy, I can predict what interactions Sprenger will expect?
You can predict what?
What the strength of the interaction.
No, of course, it's not predictive in the sense that you have to make a measurement. You have a system, you have particles, and you create particles, and you want to measure the interaction between your particles.
Yeah.
And in order to measure, you have to make an experiment, make a collision, and see what are the diffusion, the cross-section. You see, you cannot, some people have tried, but in general, you cannot predict what is the value of the strong interaction coupling, or you cannot predict what is the value of the Newton's constant, for instance.
No, you
have to measure it.
But let's say you measure something once already, so
yeah.
You identify what line you're on.
Oh, yes.
Can you then predict?
Yes, of course. And that's what I am going to do, because
okay. This
means that once you have obtained a point,
yes.
Once you know what is the value of the strength of the coupling, the strength of the interaction at a given energy scale, if you know the curve, you precisely know what will be the strength of the interaction at another energy. Okay? And that's precisely a very good remark. That's precisely what renormalization group is about. Because then you see that this result tells you that, in fact, very important fact, coupling constants in a quantum field theory and in general, all the parameters of the theory, in some sense masses also, depends on the energy scale at which they are probed. And that's a very important feature, which is here a quantum effect. And that's because of quantum effects. Remember, in the classical theory, there is an H bar here which makes that this is zero, this is zero. So G1 is always equal to G2. In a classical theory, those curves would be just horizontal. The coupling constant doesn't depend on the energy at which you probe it. Okay? And so coupling constants are called, this is an effect called the effect that we have running coupling constants. They run with the energy. And in order to do what you try to, what you suggest, to see, I know what the coupling constant of my system is at an energy, I want to guess what will be the coupling constant of the theory of the model at another energy. The best way to do that, since the energy has, is a continuous variable, is to write a differential equation for that. So instead of solving this equation, to see what's happening if I do a small variation in energy. You see? So, and so, in order to see what is the effect of the running, of how the coupling constant depends on the energy, we'll write it in a differential form. Differential form means simply that I consider how the renormalized coupling constant depends on the scale, on the renormalization scale for a given physical theory when I make a small variation of physical scale. So the idea is simply to write this in a differential form. So the idea is I choose renormalization scale mu. Okay, here. And then I know that the renormalization, the coupling constant is GR. Okay? So at this renormalization scale, the renormalized coupling constant is GR. You see? Yes?
Sorry, may I just clarify? You said that this is because of the random coupling constant is because of quantum effects?
Yes.
But that's only for this theory, right? Like in general, if we had an interacting theory where the interactions were not quantum, then the coupling constants would still run, but it wouldn't be because of, quantum effects.
No, no. We are considering
yeah.
a quantum theory.
Sure.
It's always a quantum theory.
Okay. That's true.
So,
okay, no,
what I'm discussing is a specific quantum theory,
mm-hmm.
but you will see later that for other quantum theory, like quantum electrodynamics or quantum chromodynamics, or the, in the standard model, this effect is also present. And it's a specific quantum effect.
Well, but if we had a statistical mechanics model where this could happen also where there was no quantum, possibly, right?
You mean that in a, in a statistical model, you have running, you have coupling constant which depend on the scale?
Yes.
You are referring to the effect of renormalization in critical phenomena?
For instance?
Yes. then that's mathematically the same. Of course, it's a classical theory, but it's the same mathematical effect.
Okay.
But here, in a classical statistical system, you have fluctuations. The fluctuations are thermodynamical fluctuations.
Okay.
So in the theory of critical phenomena, thermal fluctuation, statistical fluctuation, has the same effect that quantum fluctuation in this theory. So the important is to have quantum effects, namely quantum fluctuations. In a loose sense, you see. And if you remember what I explained a little bit in the first week, remember that there is a mapping between a statistical system and a quantum theory. That's exactly the same.
Okay.
It comes from this mathematical relation, you see. So if you have no fluctuation, you have no renormalization, no running complete constant. But in a statistical system, no fluctuation means that you are at zero temperature, at the absolute zero of temperature.
Yeah.
OK, so let us go back to this. So I choose a renormalization scale. And then I know the renormalization, the renormalized complete constant is GR. Now I choose a renormalization scale, mu plus d mu. And then I know that for the same theory, the renormalization complete constant is GR plus some dGR. Okay? And so this means that here this is GR, and here this is GR plus dGR. Okay? And now I want to compute what is this dGR. Divided by d mu. So, and since, in fact, it's always logarithm of mu which appear, I will compute what is dgr divided by d mu. This is, of course, dgr divided by d of log of mu. In a loose sense, well, the log of mu is not well defined, but the difference of two log of mu is well defined because it's a log of a ratio between two means. Okay? And of course, in order to do that, you just have to take this formula and here to choose that g plus dg, dgr plus dgr minus gr plus dgr squared divided by 1 half divided 1 over 4 pi squared. And here I have log of mu plus d mu squared equal gr minus 1 over 4 pi 1 half gr squared log of a mu. See the calculation. So then you expand and you find, of course, that if dgr is equal to 0, this is 0. So what you find is that dgr minus 2gr dgr times 1 over 2 times 1 over 4 pi squared log of mu. Log of mu squared minus gr squared times, and then I write what is the variation of d mu. So you find 2 times d mu over mu. I'm expanding both in dgr and in d mu and keeping just the term which has a first order. In the difference, you find that this is equal to 0. And there is a.
Is there 3?
I'm sorry, there is a. Is it correct? Yes?
Sorry, should logarithm be multiplied by 3?
Yes. Yes, of course. And here, that's because here there is a 3. I'm very sorry. It's because you have three logs. Okay, and well, in fact, you can, if you think a little bit, if you want to have an equation which makes simple, you simply have to consider that this is equal to divided by mu. So this makes the formula simpler. And at the end of this calculation, you find that this is equal to 3 over 4 pi squared gr squared plus some term of order g cubed that you have neglected, if you do this kind of calculation. Okay, so this is the differential form of this equation. Okay? And this function, in fact, of course, this is valid if you start from here, but this is valid, the same equation is valid if now you do the variation here, here, and here. So this is valid for along this curve. So you take this curve, along this curve, this is valid. Along the curve, the yellow curve. Where did I put my this curve? The function. Yeah. You see? Gr. So this thing, this means that along these curves, if I consider that gr depends on mu, in fact, this is a differential equation which tell me how gr of mu vary with mu. You see? Okay. So this is the differential form of this explicit equation. And that's the answer to your question. Now I can predict how I, with this equation, I can predict, starting from the known value of the coupling constant at a given energy scale, I can predict what will be the running coupling constant at another energy scale just by integrating this differential equation. So, okay. So now this is a very general definition. So this defines what is called a renormalization group beta function. Because by definition, this equation, this function, mu dgr of mu divided by d mu, when I choose a point here, so which means that at mu naught, gr of mu naught is fixed. Okay? So this means that at some mu naught here, I choose a value of gr, which I call gr naught. And so once I fix that, I see how gr depends on mu along the curve. You see? So, yes?
Let me say, regardless of the beta function,
yes?
We can start from some fixed point from the experiment, like gr and mu, right?
Yes.
But I want to say, if I solve this, I find that at some point, the gr goes, say, higher than 1.
Yes.
At some point of energy.
Very good question. I come back to that point later.
Okay.
Very good. But for the moment, I assume that gr is small so that I can trust my one loop calculation. And then I see what's happening. All those calculations are, of course, valid when gr is small. Okay. So by definition, this is called the beta function of gr of mu. This is a definition, beta function. Okay, and this is a general definition. So this is the result of the beta function for the 5-4 theory. But this is a general definition valid not only for phi 4, but for any quantum field theory such that the renormalized coupling constant is dimensionless. Of course, because and that's true for the phi 4 theory because it is scaling down. Okay? And so you see that if you integrate this equation, integrate the equation given by this mu dg or d mu equal beta of g, and you find how g depends on mu. Okay? And this defines what is a running coupling constant. Running coupling constant of the theory. Okay. Now, one important thing is the following. Now let us go back to your question. For the specific case of the phi 4 theory, I have to integrate. First mu here. I started by a calculation where mu was to be viewed as a renormalization scale, but we have seen that mu corresponds to the energy at which you probe the theory. So in fact, mu plays a role of the same thing that the energy E at which you probe the theory. And probing the theory at a given energy is equivalent to, in fact, to probe the energy as a function of some distance scale. So let us, what does it mean? We can ask, what does it mean for looking in position in X space? Okay, because changing the energy is equivalent to changing the distance at which you are making experiments. Okay, so let us come back to phi 4, and instead of considering this this correlation function, let us go back to the ordinary vacuum expectation value of the series. So let us go back to the correlation functions. Okay. So let us go back and let us be interested into the correlation function of a product of n operators at different points in your series. Remember, this corresponds in fact to the vacuum expectation value of the time ordered product of field operators in my quantum theory, but I use a short n notation that this is the expectation value of the operator. It means that it is in the vacuum. Okay, so this depends. Of course, this is a function. Let me call it a g for a green function. It depends on n points. It depends on the position of the points, the xi, where I have my operator, and of course. Through my renormalization calculation, this is something which is finite, so this is something a renormalized quantity. So I put an R for renormalized. I'm dealing with the ultraviolet finite renormalized theory. And of course, my renormalized theory, as we have seen, depend on GR, on the coupling constant, and it depends implicitly of the renormalization scale. Okay? So you can check easily that if you perform a scale transformation so namely if I change x into sx, you see, where so I rescale the distances, and this is equivalent to change the momenta into 1 over sx, namely the energy into 1 over sx. So making a scale transformation by a factor s is equivalent to look at the theory at energy scales of order 1 over se. And sorry, this is p and this is e, obviously. You see? And then what this calculation tells me is that, in fact, it has exactly the same effect predicted by this function. It means that those correlation functions will be, so if now I am computing, GRN of the S XI GR and mu, so I am probing the theory at larger scales, that's equivalent to look at the theory at smaller energies. You see? And probing the theory at smaller energy means looking at what happening at smaller mu, smaller energy. So in fact, what this theory tells us is that this should be equal to the renormalized correlation function of a theory where I have not rescaled the distance, but the coupling constant has changed, has run. So this means that the scaling scale transformation is equivalent to a change in the coupling constant, because the coupling constant are running. Coupling constant. Okay? There is, in fact, if you do the calculation carefully, in fact, you have an additional factor in front of that. So you have a renormalization factor Z of S, which depends on N, which depends on the field, which is associated to the fact that the field operators phi of x have to be rescaled too. And for the 5-4 theory, but for the 5-4 theory at one loop, this factor Z of S is trivial. It is just the canonical dimension S minus 1. It's because we have seen that the canonical dimension of the field phi is 1, is a length to the power minus 1. Yes?
On the right-hand side, does the energy scale mu scale?
Pardon?
I mean, when you write the equation of the scaling, that on the right-hand side, the mu,
yes,
does it scale to S, mu over S?
No, this cannot be mu of S, because if you have GR of S and mu of S, you do not change the theory. You are just moving. You are describing the same theory along S. So this results.
I scale the X, P, and E, right?
Yes.
And I write the left-hand endpoint function into the way that appears on the right. Yeah.
No, no, this is this. You know, either you change mu or you see, here I change the distance
yes.
or the momenta. And what I say is that I can reabsorb this change in the distance or this change in the momenta in a change of the coupling constant. And let us do that here. Here is the value of the four-point function. You see. Let us go back to the explicit expression for the phi 4. What the equivalent of doing something like that here is to be interested in saying now, here I have a four-point function, you see. I have a four-point function which depends on my momenta, is of gr and of mu. And now I am asking, I want to compare this to the four-point function when I divide the momenta by a factor 1 over s, gr and mu. You see, because it's equivalent to rescale, to multiply the distance by a factor s and to rescale the momenta by a factor 1 over s. So let me just take the expression here. Of course, what I get in this expression is gr minus gr squared, 1 half, 1 over 4 pi, and then I have log of s squared mu squared over p1 plus p2 squared plus the similar two other things. See? So I have a log of s here. You see? And the point is that what I'm claiming is that this log of s may be reabsorbed into a gr of s. So this is plus higher order terms. And what I'm doing simply is that I want to rewrite this as gr of s minus gr of s squared, 1 half, 1 over 4 pi log of mu squared over p1 plus p2 squared plus the other things. You see? Okay, and solution is very simple. I simply have to write that gr of s is gr minus 1 half minus gr squared 1 half 3 over 4 pi squared. I'm sorry, 4 pi squared everywhere. Yes, times log of s. And there is a factor 3 here, and there is a factor 2 because I'm computing log of s squared. Plus order. You see? So, but if I change mu by mu divided by s, I just get that this is equal to this. So it's not interesting. So this corresponds to making this expression. Yes?
OK, I understand this. But now, from this point of view,
yes?
Why we have the GR that's running? Because we do the rescaling.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
So why is it, you say it's a quantum effect of the quantum factorization?
Pardon? I'm not sure I understand your
question. In this case, why the GR is running with the mu is because we do the rescaling, right?
This kind of, here I did the explicit calculation.
Yeah, I mean.
That's the same than here, but you see, it's the same.
I see, from this point, I mean, the four-point correlation function.
Yes.
It does not depend on the rescaling. When we do the experiment, we should always get the same result, right?
No, not if you are making the experiment at different scales.
No,
The results depend on the energy scale, or the results depend on the distance between the particles. If you measure the interaction, you know, the strength of the interaction between two particles, the interaction depends on the distance.
I mean, from the normalization group, that they think.
Yes.
We got the GR runs over the energy scale.
Yes.
It's because we, more or less, we do the rescaling.
Yes.
But as you said before, we have a running constant, coupling constant running, is because due to the quantum fluctuation.
Yes.
What's the relation between these two? Because it seems to me, as long as we can do this rescaling, it's natural to have a coupling constant running over the energy.
No. The point is that there is always such a rescaling. If there were no quantum fluctuation, gr of s would be equal to gr. So it's just a way to re-express the fact that the coupling constant runs with the energy as stating that the coupling constant runs with the distance between the particles that you probe. You see? It's just a re-expression of this. And here I did the calculation explicitly. You know. I took the explicit form of the four-point function in the 5-4 theory, and that shows that if I rescale the momenta, this is equivalent to change the coupling constant. In other words, this is equal to the four-point function for the initial momenta p, but with the gr of s. And here I've not changed mu. Okay, and you, here I did explicitly the calculation, and you agree that this term, if I replace g by gr with gr given by this expression, is equivalent to this expression. Okay? Yes?
I also have a question about the range of validity of like the beta function, for instance, because let's
okay.
say...
Yes. No, very good question. It was asked already. I come to that in a few minutes.
Right, sure, but I wanted to ask also in the opposite direction. Like, let's say when you go to very low energies.
Yes.
Then how do we know that, you know, we don't have different physics or different forces at work?
I'll reply to this question a bit later. Okay. Okay, so you see that this is just a way to rescale the fact that the coupling constants are running as a relation between the correlation functions at different scales. Yes?
So you say that the result depends on energy scale mu, which I'm sensible, but at the same time, by definition, the four-point function is the same value for every mu. Yeah?
Yes. No. The four-point function gives the same results if you change mu and you change gr accordingly. But from that property, you deduce that if you fix mu and you change the scale of momenta or the scale of the distance, this can be reabsorbed in the change of the coupling constant. You see, so in other words, if I measure the strength of the interaction between two particles at a distance of 1 meter, and I deduce the value of the charge of those particles, or if I measure the strength of the interaction between two particles at the distance of 1 kilometer, and I measure the strength of this interaction, I deduce another charge, and I can relate those strengths of the interaction precisely by this relation. You see? And the relation between the difference GR, the relation between the different GR of S, where now S is a factor for a scale transformation, a transformation on the distance, and is given by you can check from this explicit result that it's given by an equation which is very much like the equation for the G dependence with respect to the energy, but simply there is a minus sign. So we have the same equation, simply there is a minus sign, and that becomes performing scale transformation by a factor s over the distance is equivalent to make scale transformation by a factor 1 over s because of the energy. So the minus sign here is just because distances. Are 1 over energies. Okay? You see? And next week, in the lecture by John Polskiski about renormalization group theory of critical phenomena, you will meet exactly that kind of equation in a statistical mechanical framework. So the physics of the problem will be very different. The fluctuation will have a thermodynamical origin instead of having a quantum origin, but the final mathematical equation are the same.
And so, and you said this is like T equal to zero?
Pardon?
You said this is at temperature is zero?
Yes. Oh, okay. So T equal to zero means G goes to zero. The Kublik constant goes to zero. Because you have an H bar per G.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. So, so now, where does this, okay, so I have done that, okay, let me use this blackboard again so that I have, oops. So now, basically, where are my neutral nodes? Oh, they are here. So, this equation is an equation which defines a flow. You see this equation, mu d over d mu of g or beta of g or s d over d s of g equal minus beta of g defines what we call the flow.
Oh,
because if you start now in g, from a given G naught at, let us say, S equal 1. And if I change S as a function of S, see, it defines a flow on the in the space constant. Okay. So here in the 5-4 theory, there is just one Kublik constant, so it's a flow which is quite trivial. Either it goes in this direction or it goes in this direction. But in general, you have a series with several Kublik constants or Kublik constant n masses. In general, you may very well have a space with different Kublik constants, G, G prime, etc. And then you may have flows which are very interesting properties. In particular, they may very well have a fixed point. And then things start to become very, very interesting. But I won't discuss that. I will just discuss the flow of the flow in the case of the 5-4 theory. So first, this flow defines, in fact, this flow defines a group, in fact, it's a semi-group, but that's not very important, group of transformations. Why is it so? Simply because it's quite trivial that if you start from some initial Kublik constant G, you make a scale transformation by factor S. Let us keep the scale transformation over the X's instead of the energy. You get G of S, if, which I call G1, let us say. This is G0, this is G1. Then I make another scale transformation S prime, and I get, of course, I get a G2, etc. So this defines the application which to S and to a G associate a G of S, which is something that we call RS of G. Let me just say that R is a transformation R depending on the scale. But it's quite obvious that if I apply, so G, so G1 in my notation is equal to RS of G naught. G2 is RS prime of G1. But so this can be written as RS prime of RS of G naught. And in the mathematical literature notation, this is just the compose of the transform RS by the compose of RS prime of G naught. You see? And it's obvious that this is equal to R of S prime times S of G naught, because performing or scale transformation by a factor S prime to something which has been scaled by a factor S amounts to make a scale transformation directly by a factor S prime times S. Okay? So you see that this group of transformation satisfies this property, R of S prime times S equal R of S times R of S prime, which means that it is a multiplicative group of transformation. So this transformation, where you see how the coupling constants are rescaled when you look at different scales of your theory, in fact defines a group. This group is called the renormalization group. Okay. And this equation, which defines how the coupling constant flow have some name in the internet. In fact, they were first discovered, this effect of renormalization, I think, was first discovered in quantum electrodynamics by Gell-Mann and Lau. Gell-Mann, I never remember if there is an N or two N. Two, yes. And Lau, so it was in the 60s, I think, end of the 50s, depending on the century. Then they have been reformulated in a more general framework in general theory by Kurt Kallan, who's in Princeton, and Kurt Simancic, who was a very good German high energy and mathematical physicist. Yes?
We're saying that this is a renormalization group. Why did you write semigroup earlier?
Why?
Yes. So later, I'm hearing that this is a group we're discussing, but earlier it sounded like it's a semigroup that we're discussing.
Yeah, no, it's a semigroup. So forget. Well, in this framework, it's a group. In the Wilsonian framework that we will discuss later, it's a semigroup because. But okay, let us forget this. This was probably too advanced. So let us just keep that it's a group, you know. So it's a realization of the multiplicative group over R plus, over the real numbers. So now we can go finally try to discuss what is the physics of this in the case of the 5-4 theory, because now we can integrate those equations. So now we consider the 5-4 theory, and we integrate this equation. 5-4. We integrate this equation. And what we found is obviously, so I want to integrate just SD over DS, or let us call it E. So ED of D, E of G equal 3 half, 1 over 4 pi squared, g squared. Okay? But it's a very simple differential equation, and you can integrate it, and what you find is g of e equal e, equal, I'm sorry, g divided by, if I start from, I start at s equal 1, that g of s equals some initial G, G of E, E is equal to G divided by 1 minus 3 over 4 pi squared log log of E, if you want. Oh, no, there was an S here, I have an E, my notation are completely inconsistent, so let me keep S. And here I have a minus, and here I have a plus. And here, I'm sorry, I have a gr. Yes. So this is the solution. See? Okay? The solution of this differential equation. And remember, S means what's happening when I am a scaling transformation. So in some sense, this means that I'm interested in what's happening when I scale the energy by 1 over S. So you see here that if S is large, so if I go to S, go to plus infinity, then the log of S becomes very large. So G of S goes to 0. Because I get a G, and I get something which is very large. Yes?
Sorry, when you write G on the right-hand side of that equation, you mean GS at 1, right?
Yes, G here is G at S equal 1. Yes. So this is the initial point. I am, as a function for here of log S, or rather, yes, as a function of log S, I am putting G of S. I start as S equal, so I start as a function of log S at S equal 0, a bit confused, S equal, so this is 0. So if here I start at G, then I have a 1 over a logarithm, basically. So this decays. So this means large distance. Which means low energy. See? So the effective coupling constant, the running coupling constant, becomes small at large energies. But now, it grows at high energies, which means short distances. So you see, the behavior of your theory is strong. So the coupling, the effective coupling is strong at short distance and is weak at high distance. And that's because of the plus sign, that's because the beta function is equal to plus something g squared. So it's because the beta function, if I write the beta function as a function of g, it's because it behaves like that. It is positive. It's plus g squared is a number. Yes?
Wait, so this is, we're saying that the denominator doesn't change sign?
I have not said that for the moment. I have said that if I start from S equal 1 and I go to large S, namely positive log S, the coupling constant decreases.
Yeah, well, yes, yes.
I have not discussed yet what's happening if the logarithm of S is negative because S is smaller than 1, so I'm going to small distance. Okay? For the moment, I'm going that. And so this means that when I go to small distance, to large distances, the running coupling constant goes in this direction. And so it's attracted by g equals 0. So if you want, g equals 0 is an what is called an attractive infrared fixed point. It's the language of those renormalization group transformation. It's this language of flows of coupling as a function of the scale. See? And that's because the beta function has a positive sign. Okay? Now, of course, it's the opposite. And for high distance, the flow goes like that. I'm sorry, for high, high energies. Okay? So G equals zero is said to be a repulsive, that's the same thing, or a repulsive ultraviolet fixed point. If you're looking at the properties of the theory at high frequency, high energy, so it's called the ultraviolet regime, then the coupling constant flows away from G equals zero. See? So at large distance, low energy, you are a regime of low coupling, of small coupling. Small coupling. And at high energy, short distances, you are in a regime of strong coupling.
When do you mean by repulsive?
Pardon?
What do you mean by repulsive?
By?
Repulsive.
Repulsive, it means simply that when I'm studying the behavior of the theory at large distances, even if the coupling was very small, after some time it becomes very large. So you are repelled by the fixed point when you go to high energy. And you are attracted by this fixed point when you are in low energy.
I don't understand. I mean, when you go to high energies, you're moving in that direction, right?
Yes, I'm moving in this direction. So I'm repelled from this point.
So you're repelled from the IR fixed point then?
Yeah, no, it's just to say two things. This is exactly the same thing. It means simply that if I look at the infrared flows, if I look at what's happening at high energy, at low energy, I am attracted by G equals zero. And if I look at what's happening at high energy, I'm repelled.
Okay.
Okay. So it's just two way to state the same thing.
I see.
Okay. Okay. And then you see here, of course, that there is a problem because, as you mentioned, there is a point where the denominator vanishes. You see, here there is a point where G of S becomes infinite, and it is when log S equal minus 4 pi squared over 3, 1 over G. You see? So this means that your perturbative calculation breaks down at high energy. At high energy, you cannot assume, even if you start from a perturbative calculation where you assume that the coupling constant is small, you cannot assume that when you are studying the theory at high energy, this assumption was consistent. So you don't know really what's happening here. You see, we started by doing perturbative calculation. We renormalized the theory, assuming that the coupling constant was small. We saw that it was consistent. But then we study the consequence of this assumption. You see that this assumption becomes inconsistent at high energy. So we are on shaky ground. And this problem was noticed long time ago by Landau, and I will explain what it is. Okay. So now, what's the status of the other field theory? Okay, I think I will end here. what is the status of the other theory? So, for, we have seen that for a 5-4 theory, the beta function of the theory is of the form plus t squared. So it has this form with a coefficient, which is like this. In fact, that's also the case for quantum electrodynamics. In quantum electrodynamics, the beta, the coupling constant is, of course, alpha. And the result of the calculation is that it's also alpha squared with a plus sign. Yes?
Sure, the perturbation breaks down and g equals to 1.
No, because, well, if you start from a g which is small, the perturbation theory is valid up to a regime where it's called.
I mean, sure, the perturbation breaks down when g reaches the value equals to 1.
Yeah, or of that order, let's say.
Yeah. So that means it does not need to go to infinity.
That?
In some case, even if g goes to some finite number, but
yes,
it's bigger than 1, it also breaks down.
Yeah, no, it could make sense, but we don't know. Perturbative calculation breaks down. We have to study what's happening. Okay? And for instance, you can see that, look at, think of that. This means that's happening when at an S critical, let us say, which is of order exponential of minus 4 pi squared over 3 times 1 over g. So the S critical where this happened is given by the exponential of minus 1 over g. So it's something you will never be able to study by perturbation theory. Because if you are doing the Taylor expansion of exponential of minus 1 over g, at all order, it's 0. So this is an example of a function which has a function of g, this function, exponential of minus 1 over g. It's a function which is non-zero, but all its derivative vanishes at 0. Not only the first derivative, not only the second derivative, all the derivative vanishes at 0. So this is a typical non-perturbative, non-perturbative feature of the theory. The remarkable fact is that this non-perturbative feature of the theory, the fact that the perturbation theory breaks down at energy scales of order given by that number, we get it from a perturbative calculation. Yes?
So trying to work out the argument that shows us that the perturbative theory breaks down at high energies. At high energies, g is large. So according to that equation, log of s is negative, very small number.
Yes.
About 0. We can't say it's about 0.
No. Remember, the logs can be negative. The problem is not when log of s is 0. The problem is when this is close to 0. Because then this becomes very large.
But I was looking, it looked like when you were arguing for a perturbative calculation breaks down, you're using the log of s equals negative, et cetera.
Yes. Yes.
Would you mind explaining again how that shows that perturbative calculation breaks
down? No, simply, I started from all what I did yesterday and today was to study, define renormalized theory, but to first order in G. And then I explained to you that there are good reasons to explain that this formulation is valid in perturbation theory. But perturbation theory makes sense only if you assume that G is small, because it's a series expansion, and you assume that you can resum this series. And usually, you can resum the series around the origin. The situation is more complicated than that for far. But OK, never mind. Imagine that the perturbative series is a convergence series. It has a finite radius of convergence. So you can trust perturbation theory as long as g is small. But you have no reason to expect to trust perturbation theory if g is large, because you might expect what is called non-perturbative phenomena.
That sounds like a reasonable argument, but I'm wondering how you get the same result from our S calculations. As in, so you just told, you just give us an explanation that relies on what we did.
Yes. No, it's, at that stage, it's a warning.
But apparently there's reason to believe from our calculations that involve S
yes,
that perturbative calculation breaks down at high energy. And I'm
yes,
wondering what it is about our calculations that involve S that imply that perturbative calculations break down at high energy. I don't see what the argument in this context is.
I'm not sure I understand the difference between your argument and my argument. Okay, we can discuss when we do the break, or after, because then it's going live. So let me just finish that, and then we discuss. So the important fact is that for Young-Mills theory, Mills theory, any general theory like QCD or the standard, or then the calculation of the beta function is found to be with a negative sign. And this was a great discovery of Toft, then Gross plus Politzer, and Vilcek, I think. No, it was Gross and Vilcek, I'm sorry. Vilcek was, and Politzer in 74, I think. Well, in fact, Toft discovered that in 72. I think there were some Russians which had some hints of what was happening before that. The great discovery that these people were able to compute, first time rigorously by Toft, the beta function of a non-abelian gauge series, and he found a minus sign. So this means that the beta function is something like that, as a function of the Cooper constant. And then this means the opposite. It means that as a function of S, the coupling constant behaves like that, G of S. And so at high energy, G goes to zero. And that's very good for two reasons. First, for experimental results, because this agreed with experiments which were going on at slack in this period, trying to understand what was going on inside the proton and the neutron. They found that there were constituents, which we know now are the quarks, and they found that the higher the energy you were probing the neutrons, the weaker the interaction between the probe and the quarks was. And this was unexplained until Toft calculated, and Gross, Politzer, and Wilczek calculated the beta function. Second, this is good. So this is one reason why it is good. Even another reason why it is good is that it means that for gauge theory, we can trust renormalization theory. So renormalization theory is consistent for those gauge theories. Why? Because renormalization theory says that we have a way to control the high energy behavior of the theory by renormalizing the things, but this way works in perturbation theory. So you see, there is it's a bit of a self-consistent. We want to control the high energy behavior of the theory, which is full of divergences, when the coupling constant is small. And once we have done that, we have to check whether at high energy our assumption was consistent. And it's true for theories like that, which are called asymptotically free. This is called asymptotic freedom. Of course, in the infrared, in the ultraviolet, so at high energy. At high energy, we flow that way. Now, we can expect also that we have problem at low energy. But this is meaning simply here that you have non-perturbative phenomena at low energy. And that's also a feature of this series. But I will discuss that next week. So these theories are called asymptotically free in the infrared. But gauge theories that I will explain next week are asymptotically free in the ultraviolet regime at high energy. And that's very important. Thank you. I spent 2.